am Femi Oke, and you're watching the stream. On today's episode, we are going to be focusing on the death by suicide rates in India. It's a sensitive, very difficult conversation to have. I wanted to warn you so you can decide where you want to spend the next 25 minutes, whether it's with us here at Al Jazeera or whether you need to just take a break and move away from the screen. The leading cause of death in young people in India is suicide. 36% of all women in the world who take their own lives are in India. This is a huge, serious problem, but it is a problem that actually has solutions. We start our show with Nelson Moses.
I started Suicide Prevention India Foundation because I lost my best friend to suicide. Suicide is the most preventable form of death. 8 out of 10 individuals are giving us warning signs, verbal, non-verbal, and written. Our organization trains individuals, students, housewives, crisis helpline volunteers, medical students, doctors, nurses, corporate professionals, to be able to pick up these warning signs, have a conversation with them, provide emotional support, persuade them to get help, and refer them to a mental health professional. Trained gatekeepers are in a position to save thousands of lives, and this is critical in a country like India, where we do not have enough infrastructure, investment, research, or a suicide prevention policy. We need to train millions to save thousands.
I want this episode to be a very open conversation between you viewers and our panelists. So you can talk to us about anything connected to death by suicide. The comment section is here on YouTube. Ask your questions, share your comments. We'd be delighted to hear from you. Let me introduce you to your panel. We have Amrita, Sumitra, Raki. Thank you for being part of the stream today. Amrita, please introduce yourself to the stream audience.
Hi, thank you so much for having us. I'm Amrita Tripathi, a former journalist, and I set up something called the Health Collective to look at mental health and illness from an India lens about 6 years ago.
Good to have you. Hello, Sumitra. Welcome to the stream. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, thanks for asking me to join. I'm Soumitra Pathare. I'm a psychiatrist by training, and I work as the director of the Center for Mental Health Law and Policy, a research organization based in Pune, India.
Welcome. And Raki, good to see you. Please introduce yourself to our viewers around the world.
Thank you for having me. I'm Raki Dandona, Professor of Public Health at Public Health Foundation of India based in New Delhi, and professor at University of Washington based in Seattle.
Guess our first challenge is, how do you explain in a country as large as India why there would be such a high proportion of young people who take their lives, such a high proportion of women who take their lives, why this is such a big issue for India? There are going to be certain areas about economics and socioeconomics that we want to delve into. Let me start, Amrita. You can give us one idea, one thought, and we can build as a panel. What is it in India, an Indian society, where people in quite large numbers would consider that suicide is an option for them?
I think, you know, one thing that we've learned is that it's multifactorial, it's a multidimensional issue. I also want to say it's not just limited to India, though this is the topic here. 90% of deaths due to suicide in adolescents globally are in the developing world. So I worked on this book with Dr. Pathare, so I'm going to toss this question to him. This is a book we did to investigate what's happening with the suicide crisis in India. And I would say the big learning for me, looking at this as a, you know, a former journalist who came in to understand, unpack and do interviews, was that unlike the narrative we have in the West, it's not all mental illness related. Dr. Pathare, we've talked about this a lot, social determinants. Yeah, right. There are so many socioeconomic issues that come to play as well.
Let's put the book on the screen so we can see it. And then, Sumitra, we have it ready. We knew you were going to talk about it. And then, Sumitra, what would be really helpful would be to talk about, it's not necessarily depression that is forcing people into feeling they have no option, taking such drastic action. It is life. Life in terms of poverty. Can they afford to farm? We know about the farmer's suicide crisis. There are other elements where in some parts of the world it would be depression. But in India, we're looking at economic factors that are pushing people into extreme action. Talk to us about that.
Well, I mean, it is true. If you look at some of the data that we have from India, not that we have a lot of data, but the data that we have in India, less than half of the people who die by suicide in India would have a mental health problem. The remaining half or even more than that, 60%, would have presumably no mental health problem. Now, this is extremely challenging, and it's very difficult to how it is in the West. You know, Raki can talk to you about that, about what happens in the West. But our numbers are predominantly because of non-mental health issues. And just to kind of toss in something which might be interesting, that in 2020, last year, during the pandemic year, our suicide numbers went up by 10%. If you look at the West and in the Western Hemisphere, in North America, suicide rates did not move at all. And one of the big differences, really, as I see it, is that livelihoods and incomes were protected during the corona pandemic in the West, whereas in India, we didn't really have that kind of protection. So, you know, there is clearly a link between economics. There is also other issues like, and we'll talk about that, patriarchy and the status of women in society, the fact that we have a lot of gender-based violence in our society. And those are also issues which impinge on that. Alcohol is another big issue. I mean, these are all things that we don't really talk about as having a direct relationship to suicide. Raki, what do you think?
Yeah, if I could add to that, I think in terms of you ask questions for me about the numbers in India. I think if you look at the rate is how we compare, same disease across different geographies. So the rate for deaths by suicide, global average is about 10 per 100,000 people. And in India, that's 14. So the rate itself is not very different, but it's just that our population is so much that the numbers become a lot. And that's what our problem is. Our rate is not as much, but our numbers are way more than what you would expect given our large population. But in terms of rate, if you compare, our problem is with women. Women die by suicide twice more in India than the global average. So India, if you take 100,000 women, 12 would die by suicide as compared with only 6, which is global average. So there, in terms of numbers, we have a bigger problem. But on an average, our problem is because we are a large country to begin with. I also agree. I think depression is less diagnosed in India. You know, we do know 1 in 7 people in India is suffering from depression, but that's still an underdiagnosis. And there is a relationship between depression and suicide death in India as well. But overall, our diagnosis of mental health issues is also very less, which makes it very difficult for us to fully get a picture of, you know, why people take their own life.
Yeah. Raki, that's a very good point, because you can say, oh, well, it's not due to depression, but if you don't have numbers or people don't have access to talk to a therapist, yeah, how would we know? Well, that is a scene setter for the multiple challenges that India is dealing with regarding death by suicide. I'm going to push us on a little bit because there are answers to these challenges. I want to go to Dr. Palkar, who spoke to us a few hours ago. This is what he told us.
Almost all the tertiary care hospitals in the country now have a dedicated psychiatry and a psychology unit. And most of these units are running 24/7. The emergency services are always open. There is definitely a scope to take mental health to the grassroots level as well, so that it becomes more accessible. And the way to do that is to destigmatize our talks and conversations around mental health. Once we start accepting that we are as vulnerable to suffering from depression, anxiety or schizophrenia as we are to suffering from malaria, typhoid, diabetes or hypertension, then we will start to accept our mental health just as we accept our physical health, and we'll start seeking help as well.
So what I'm hearing there is that hospitals are beginning to understand that there are mental illnesses and they have departments for mental illnesses, but from the grassroots level, that is where most of the help needs to come from. Let me start with you, Sumitra. When we're talking about actual practical solutions, name one.
Well, I'll give you the one which fascinates me most. You know, there was this wonderful study that came out of Brazil. I don't know if you've heard of it, but they followed up 100 million people who, over a period of 15 years, who had received a conditional cash transfer. You know, Brazil, during President Lula's time, started this program. So they've got a huge amount of data. And what you find there is that the suicide rate among people who received those unconditional cash transfers was down by 61%. There's not a single mental health intervention which brings down suicides by 61%. A similar intervention in Indonesia, where they give out cash transfers to the poorest people in the country, about 10% of the population, brought down suicide rates by about 20%. You know, these are big numbers, and none of our mental health interventions have done that. Or look at the policy change on education that happened in one of the states in India, in Tamil Nadu, which brought down suicides by almost 75% over a period of 10 years. So, you know, a lot of this is, you're going to make changes if you actually intervene at the broader level of policy. And my analogy for this, which I always use if I'm talking to lay people, is imagine if you're having a lot of accidents on a particular road. Now, one thing you could always do is station a lot of ambulances out there. So you'll try and save lives because the ambulances are there available quickly. But really, if you want to prevent those accidents, you need to look at driver training. You need to look at the design of the road. You need to look at what's going wrong. Are there blind spots on the road? Is the lighting very poor on the road? Now, those are the things that will create or prevent accidents happening in the first instance. The healthcare service will save lives, but it's not going to prevent the accident. And it's the same thing with suicides. You know, suicides, if you want to save them, we need to look at the broader structural issues, which we are not addressing at the moment in our country.
I have a couple of questions for you. Do you mind if I just put them to you? Because I invited our audience to talk to you. So just give me a moment and I want to share this with you, if I may, and then you can come right back in. So Rishab says, the majority of suicides by women are from rural areas. Many of these areas are common with domestic violence. So they have domestic violence in those areas and they don't have support or help from family members. Raki, I see you nodding. Do you want to take that question?
Yes, sure. I mean, that's an interesting question. We fully do not understand yet in India, given the data that we have, whether more women take their lives in rural India or urban India. But we do understand that, you know, the Indian states, the southern Indian states, which are more educated, more empowered for women as compared with the northern Indian states, have a higher rate of death by suicide. Which is quite difficult to explain or understand, because on one side we say that as you educate more women, as you make them more empowered, as you make them financially more empowered, the decision making is better. But that is also resulting in a higher rate of suicide deaths among these women. We do understand a little bit about the risk factors for these deaths. In northern India, yes, as Rishabh said, it's a lot around family problems, marriage issues. But we fully do not have the details of what this means. And in the southern states, it's also about family issues. But the issues here may be different. But the police data that captures all this information in India does not allow us to differentiate if the family problems are more of domestic violence on the northern Indian side and more of other issues that Soumitra raised earlier in the southern Indian side.
Amruta, I want to really focus on solutions that save lives and change lives. I'm going to start with one thought from Jasmine Kalhar and then pick up off the back of Jasmine, because there are real changes that happen that save people from taking their own lives. Here's Jasmine, first of all.
Whether it's mental health, employment, education, social welfare, suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. We first need to acknowledge that suicides are preventable and therefore look at evidence-based interventions that have proven to work, whether it is at the level of individual, community, and structural reforms. Therefore, we do need to focus on a national suicide prevention policy that can address some of these issues and help us reach the sustainable development goals.
So, yeah, that's a really great point to pick up off of. And I think the idea is to look at what's implementable. I'll give you two examples. One is we look at what Sri Lanka has done with limiting access to very toxic pesticides. If you look at the work that we're seeing in India when it comes to the agrarian crisis that's leading to farmer suicides, Sri Lanka was able to slash their suicide rates by taking action. I know Dr. Patare and others have been advocating for India to look at something like this. But Femi, let me also talk about the media, because I feel like what ends up happening sometimes in these conversations is that we don't realize we all have a role to play. So, you know, this we were looking at what the media can do. One is to follow the guidelines that have been put in place by the WHO in India, by the Press Council of India as well, on how you report about suicide, how you talk about suicide, so that you can avoid copycat suicides or suicide contagion, which is called the Werther effect. And we had, you know, this example in the book that Tanmoy Goswami writes about, actually first for the Health Collective. This example is from Vienna in the mid-80s, where there was a sudden spike of suicides related to the subway. And they were able to bring this down by 75% by putting in responsible reporting from the media, putting in media blackouts, because honestly, we don't need to sensationalize how we tell these stories. We do need to focus on the crisis. But I mean, what journalists do best is look at the heart of the story, right? Put the families back in the heart of the story, mm-hmm. talk about what can be prevented, what can be done. So we do want to look at what are evidence-based ways of tackling this crisis, and each stakeholder has a role to play.
That's a really important point, because all the way through this show and as we put together this episode, I've been so careful to make sure I'm using the right vocabulary, the right tone. How are we talking about it? Let's not stigmatise it. So my head right now is so focused on that. And I have a feeling that not everybody, not every publication, not every broadcaster is thinking that carefully, that their words, whether they're written or they're broadcast, could impact some families' lives, their outcomes. And I think that's really important. Let me go back to YouTube. I have a thought here. Siraj says that it's not only farmers that have a suicide crisis, but also there's a high rate of student suicide in India, particularly around exam time. And Sumitra, I know that there was a solution put in place, that it was so simple, so genius, that has saved young people's lives. Tell us about that, the way that the exams are stacked, which stop young people from feeling that they've ruined their lives, that their exams are awful and they have no other options. What was the fix for that?
Well, actually, it was a very simple fix. You know, what we hear normally every year is at the not exam times as much as the results time. June, July is when the results of the board exams come out, which is the equivalent of your high school exams or the A-levels or O-levels, as you would know from the UK. So at that time, when these results come out, there's a lot of times when young people, especially students aged 16 to 18, might die by suicide, take their lives. And most of the time, there's a UN outcry, and every state government will start a counseling helpline at that time. We actually don't know if those counseling helplines make a difference or don't make a difference. But one of my close friends and colleagues, Dr. Lakshmi Vijayakumar, who's been working in the area of suicide prevention in India for decades now, you know, she got after one of the state governments in Tamil Nadu, in the southern state of Tamil Nadu. And they did a very simple thing, which is that they said, once the board results are out, if you haven't failed, or if you got poor marks, if you thought you should have got better and you got poor marks, you could actually sit for a supplementary exam within the next 15, 20 days or a month after the results. And if you pass the exam or if you got a better score, then great, you'd go ahead with those scores as your scores. And just this simple thing, you know, this one simple thing over 10 years meant that suicide rates in Tamil Nadu after results, exam results, were down by 50%. And you also have to remember that during that time, the number of students taking that exam went up by about 100%. You know, the number of students taking the exams doubled while the suicide rate halved. So you can see that's like a 3/4 reduction.
It's extraordinary. And it's so simple.
Yeah, it is.
So
it's
simple.
Oh,
my goodness. I love that idea. I mean, I don't love the idea of taking exams, but having more than one option, right? Get to do a do-over. We all deserve a do-over in life. Raki, I am wondering about, are there enough mental health professionals in India to cope with the need?
There aren't, Femi, and that's a big challenge. And many of them who are there are actually in urban areas. So as you know, most of the Indian population is still rural. So we have a big mismatch of, so we already have a shortage, and then we have mismatch within that shortage. We do have a national mental health program under which I think one of the, it was also alluded to that more mental health experts are now being set, units are being set up. but those units are not really manned all the time. The quality of the mental health care that's been given is still questionable. So we have lots to do to get our mental health diagnosis right. But then we also have an issue in terms of access to treatment. One is, you know, having a doctor to treat you, but then the other is having access in terms of money, in terms of medicines to actually continue with that treatment. So it's a larger issue to deal with in terms of addressing mental health, especially for suicides.
Amrita, I'm just
gonna... I don't want to go back to what Amrita said. I think this is a fantastic, very simple solution done in Tamil Nadu. But what's unfortunate is that the other states are not using it as much. I think what it highlights for us is how the other states in India need to learn from each other. So if India needs to learn from elsewhere, I think Amrita gave an example of Sri Lanka and insecticide, pesticide regulations. But even within India, Indian states need to learn from each other to actually reduce these numbers for students that we see every year.
I'm wondering, Amrita, I'm just looking at the book, which is where we started, Life Interrupted, that you wrote with a number of colleagues, including Sunitra. It's on my laptop right now. I'm wondering if India is missing a national suicide prevention policy programming. I know that there's work in progress, but when will that work be done?
Yeah, firstly, thank you. That looks much better than me waving this around. But
although I appreciate your commitment.
Get the message out there. Absolutely. I think the mental health advocates have been clear about this. We need a national suicide prevention policy. The work that has been done, though, has been phenomenal, right? I mean, India finally decriminalized suicide, which is actually mind-boggling to think that, you know, attempting suicide was a crime till very recently. Which is also why it's the you know, the police and the crime bureau that collects all the data. Dr. Patare alluded to the fact that, you know, we don't have very accurate data, or the data collection is a problem. We do need that policy. But for me, the other thing I would say is it's not enough for us to look at that and say it's missing. So let's just wait for that to happen. There are, you know, fantastic examples. Again, I think between, you know, Professor Rakhi and Dr. Patare, they can share about these kind of peer educator programs about getting the message out. We know that gatekeeper training is something that, you know, especially for your audiences who maybe are maybe urban privileged and so on, can look at. Because I think that what's clear from what Professor Rakhi was also saying is you're not going to have enough trained experts. And again, we do have to clarify, it's not just a mental illness issue, right? I mean, there are so many determinants to this. But I think that for each of us to know that there is a role we can play here, whether we're in the media, whether we're in public policy, whether we're in academia, and certainly in academia, schools, counselors, teachers, principals, you're also gatekeepers to our young people. So that is a crisis that you can help avert.
All right. So I want to play one more thought. And this comes from Kinjal Goyal, who talks about it takes a village, it takes a country, it takes all of us to really appreciate the toll that death by suicide has on a society. Here she is.
Suicide prevention is a multifaceted task. The personal, medical, and social angles are all equally important. Unless they are all taken into consideration, it will be impossible to make any change in the statistics. A survivor's handbook can be a very useful tool for the friends and family of someone who dies by suicide. It can help the survivors deal with their feelings of grief, guilt, and even shame. Once the guilt and shame have been taken care of, it becomes easier for people to look at suicide with a sort of reverence and understanding of what happened. It is only through this deep understanding that we can actually prevent suicides in the future.
I want to thank Amrita, Sunitra and Rakhi for helping us understand the suicide crisis in India so much more clearly. If you are currently having suicidal thoughts, or you know somebody who is, there are always ways for people to help you. So I'm going to leave you with this video from the World Health Organization. Thanks for watching. Take care.